This is Vectis Radio. For the people, by the people.
Welcome to Joe Plumb's political soapbox on Vectis Radio.
Yes, we can.
Because Brexit means Brexit.
This, Mr. President, is a remarkable record.
The Isle of Wight Zoo is having difficulty importing a tiger.
My father gave me a small loan of $1 million.
Which we wouldn't have if we listened to the muttering idiot sitting opposite me.
On the show today, we have Julia Baker-Smith.
Across the Isle of Wight and across the world, this is Vectis Radio.
Hello, you're listening to the Political Soapbox with me, Joe Plumb, and today we're welcome to the studio, Julia Baker-Smith. Hello.
Hi, Joe.
You are the new leader of the Island Independents and councillor for the ward of Whippingham and Osborne. So it's been quite an interesting few weeks for you since taking over as the leader of the Independents. I'm sure from Bacon and Stubbings when they stepped down and the launch of the new administration. Kind of how have you found the group since that big change?
The group have really pulled together, actually. It's been really lovely. You know, everyone, you know, including Jonathan and Steve, have been pulling in the same direction and working really towards the same end. So I think in many ways it's somehow brought us closer. I think when you go through a crisis like that, it brings people together.
So this week there's been a lot of talk in the chamber about the budget that's gone through that obviously has been changed and amended by the current administration of Conservative and UKIP. On some of the things you've put on I know on your Facebook page, you've said, you know, this is the list of things that that they've cut or they've raised the price of things like the floating bridge and the council tax up to 5% and all these things. And then on the other side, you've listed that you know, if the Island Independents get in again, people are looking at that and going, well, you know, the Island Independents had the opportunity to make sure that didn't happen, to make sure that, you know, 100% of the youth offer went through, that there was support for all these services and they weren't having cuts. The public had given them the opportunity, and then when things got tough, they bailed and stepped out. So why would they put the faith in the Independents to do this in the next election?
I think the first myth to bust, if you like, is that the Island Independents walked away. We had an internal change within our group. Jonathan and Steve didn't feel they were able to continue as leader and deputy leader for their own moral and personal reasons. And we put forward a strong candidate in the form of Ian Stevens. He had been leader before. He only stepped down last time because he focused on standing for parliamentary candidate in 2015. So we put forward a strong candidate. Actually, the Conservatives, along with their alliance of UKIPs and others that had left various other groups and parties previously, they had the opportunity to do this for the last 18 months, 2 years. They had the numbers, but they chose not to step up and take responsibility when they had the numbers to do so. And it seems to me that they just chose to take this opportunity of a hostile takeover because they've got an election coming. And I think that's really, really unfortunate. But the Island Independents certainly didn't walk away.
From a public perception, there's definitely how it seems to appear, doesn't it? Because you've obviously, that administration has finished, and without that leadership, and if you see the Island Independents as being a group that kind of has lots of fractions, that can't get on with each other, has leadership issues, do we put our faith in that in the next election if you can't pull together to be able to keep an administration going for a full term?
Again, myth busting number two. There aren't lots of factions. You know, we are a strong, solid political group that work together. You know, we're independent of national party politics, but we're certainly not independent of each other. And we work together very, very effectively through consensus in order to get strong and solid decisions. I can't myth bust enough that there's certainly nothing wrong within our group.
So let's talk about the budget itself. So what key elements of the budget would you have liked to have, or would the island independence have changed from the current budget that it stands?
Well, firstly, we had cut the social care cuts almost in half in our budget. The level of change that the Conservative budget is proposing over the next year is really, really unrealistic and very, very high risk. High risk both to the residents that rely on the social care services, but also high risk financially. There was over £1 million worth of risk written into this budget, acknowledging the fact that actually it's not very achievable. They're looking to move 50% of people that are currently having their care directly ordered, if you like, directly commissioned, onto personal budgets. Now, we're talking about people who maybe have learning difficulties, who have severe disabilities, and older people who are going to really struggle to employ someone directly. The only other option to employing carers directly and having the responsibility for tax and national insurance and all of those elements is to use a company that employ personal assistants. But at the moment, there are not enough personal assistants and there aren't enough companies on the island to actually be able to cover that market. So the market's going to really, really struggle to cope. Beyond that, the rates that are currently set, I think it's about £16.50 an hour with our current care providers, those rates would then be dropped down to £12.50 an hour. Now, by the time someone's paid a carer even just minimum wage, and then all of the overheads and what have you that come into that, the care companies are going to really, really struggle, and I'm very, very concerned about that, and that's why we wanted to try and minimise that as much as possible.
So obviously with these, with the cuts and things that you say, you know, you would fight where, and I know Bacon and Stubbings, one of the big things they said was about the fact that they've got there isn't enough money to be able to keep these services going and to keep them and to keep them running. So where would the island independents find the money to be able to continue to support these services?
Okay, so we were very much looking at the capital budget. So as many people know, there was quite a large capital receipt last year in the form of the sale of the site that the new ASDA is now being built upon. So that was £17.5 million. In our medium term financial strategy, we had proposed keeping that £17.5 million intact effectively for a rainy day, so that if we needed to have some room for manoeuvre within the budgets, we would have that money available to us. We're now in a situation whereby the Conservatives have decided to spend all of that £17.5 million on things that really are nice to have rather than things that are needed. So refurbishing County Hall, replacing windows and computers and desks and goodness knows what else within County Hall, which I would rather save our frontline services. I'd rather that people that were travelling on the floating bridge to get to work every day, for example, didn't have to pay £1.50 just to get across what is actually a public highway. I would rather we were able to keep Afton Marsh open for the number of days a week it currently is. I mean, it's only open 3 days a week as it is, dropping it down to two. I can't even see how that is meeting the statutory duty to have a waste recycling centre within a certain distance of everyone's homes. The same with Lynn Bottom Tip. How people in winter months who are at work are going to be able to get to the tip before it closes at 4 o'clock, I just don't know. So I would rather have retained those services than look at spending money on running machines, for example, for the Heights and for Medina, when, you know, it's pretty well run facility. You know, there's some pretty good equipment in there as it is, and again, on buying desks and laptops for County Hall, it just seems nuts to me.
We talk about a bit about the rise in council tax, so taking it up to 5%. Is this something the island independents would agree with, or and if not, then how else would you, you talk about not having enough money. This is an example of where you could get that extra money.
There's a very strong matter of principle here, because what central government have done is they've cut the funding that's coming down from central government for social care and given local councils the ability to put what they're calling this 3% precept onto the council tax. Now, there seems to be this idea now with central government that everything has to be funded through council tax. What about all the other taxes that we pay? What about all the other taxes that hard-working people on this island pay? Their income tax, very large proportion of their income, just goes out the door straight away. They then end up having to pay that tax again on their pensions later in life. We pay VAT, we pay road tax, yet all of this money seems to be going off the island and it's not coming back again. And this is where we felt that there needed to be some kind of stand against this idea that council tax has to pay for all services on the island. It shouldn't be. We pay other taxes.
Do you not feel that people are seeing cuts and seeing struggles in the services that are actually kind of going, you know, we'll have an increase in our council tax so that we can pay for the services to remain open? They see that correlation and that link between if the council aren't getting the most that they possibly can out of people, then why complain about not having any services?
I think there are people that can afford to pay more in their council tax. But what you've got to remember is when we increase council tax, we're doing that across the board. So we're not just talking about, you know, maybe someone in a 6 or 7 bedroom house that can afford, you know, an extra however much a week or a month. We're talking about those people in a Band C property who, for them, £1.19 is the difference between buying a loaf of bread to make their children's packed lunches and not being able to make the packed lunches for school this week. And you have to remember that anyone that's working, anyone that isn't on direct benefits, they're paying for that and they're just about managing. The Prime Minister talks all the time about people who are just about managing and about looking after them. She isn't looking after them. I'm someone that just about manages. You know, my income as a councillor is £8,000 a year. You know, I struggle some weeks to make sure that I've got a loaf of bread in to do the packed lunches on a Sunday night. And there are people that are in a far worse position than me that really struggle. They go out, they work two jobs, they've got kids to feed. And anyone that's seen the film I, Daniel Blake, knows that there are real people in those situations that really can't afford even an amount such as £1.19 a week.
There's been a lot of talk this week, especially with protests that are happening about the ice rink and things like that. We saw videos on Facebook of that happening, and a lot of campaigns about people saying there is not enough services for young people on the island, with cuts to the youth offer this week and problems with the ice rink and other things on the island. What would an island independence-led council after May do to help support young people? Have you done enough so far?
Again, we would continue to support the youth offer. We actually increased funding to the youth offer previously. We would continue to do, as we proposed this year, to retain the funding to the youth offer. You know, these preventative services, these giving young people something to do, giving them a purpose, really does not only help them later down the line, but it also saves the council money down the line. And you have to take a common sense approach and be investing in your young people in order that they want to stay on the island as they grow up, in order that they want to learn here, in order that they want to develop their skills here, and ultimately that they want to work here and grow businesses here. Otherwise, you'll just see a mass exodus, as we have done in the past, of young people leaving the Isle of Wight, and we get this very, very top heavy demographic where we're surrounded by people who are retired and those that aren't necessarily inputting into the economy. Now, again, you know, I support retired people moving to the Isle of Wight and staying here on the Isle of Wight, and we absolutely need to be supporting them through their later years and supporting them with social care. So it's about looking after people at all ends of the spectrum.
There's been a lot of talk on this show throughout the last couple of months about that, about the solar gap and the barrier is especially on people between 18 and 30 and trying to kind of retain those people, because obviously they go off to university and a small percentage will return, but most will go out and go to the mainland and have jobs across the country. What can we do to retain those? What actual things can we do to try and keep education? Try and keep those kind of 18 to 30-year-olds on the island, and then, or if they go off to university, to return.
We need to be developing skills here on the island, and I think the CCAM in Whippingham that is just being built now as part of the Isle of Wight College that will be bringing engineering and skills, I think that's absolutely vital. But then we need the jobs here as well. But what we're finding is the average age of people that are working in places like GKN and BAE, I believe, is over 50. So we really do need to be making sure that young people are developing those skills on the island. The CCAM's had over £10 million worth of investment from the Solent Local Enterprise Partnership, which I was absolutely in favour of. And I think as we move forward, we will be able to retain people and we will be able to retain jobs here. The regeneration strategy that the Island Independence brought forward will see the growth of jobs on the island and encourage industry, encourage companies to invest here and grow here. We've got one of the best rural broadband services in the country. We should be absolutely be using that and ensuring that companies out there know that they can come and they can invest here, and particularly with the e-commerce type companies, you know, they don't have to be in a big city. They can be here in a rural location and have a beautiful place to live as well.
In terms of then linking that from young people to education, with obviously the links that the Independence made with handing over to Hampshire a lot of the children's services and running of the schools, do you think that's been successful?
I think it's been very successful. I think it's unfortunate that came about in the first place. Obviously, when we took over in 2013, the Isle of Wight had just been placed under a ministerial direction. There were, I think it was 11, 13 failing schools on the Isle of Wight at the time. And all of those promises that we had heard from the Conservative Party in the 8 years previous had just been broken. You know, they'd restructured our school system. I was never in favour of moving from a three-tier to a two-tier system. I think the way it was done was an absolute disaster. I think they tried to do it too quickly. I can remember at one particular school, a whole year group of children were being taught in the hall because they didn't have enough classrooms. And that has seriously impacted upon their education. So when we came in, we had a job to do. We had a job to fix the education system on the Isle of Wight, and we had a job to help our young people succeed, and that's what we've done. There's only one school that's in difficulty now here on the Isle of Wight, and all the rest are in an upwards trajectory. And I think that really says a lot for what the Independent administration have achieved over the last 4 years working with Hampshire.
If the Independents were to get a majority in May, would the link with Hampshire be something you continue, or would you like to see kind of the Isle of Wight take back control of its children's services?
You know, ideally, the Isle of Wight would have control of all of its services, in my view. But we need to take a sensible and measured approach and make sure that we don't make any decisions which are going to take the island backwards again. So that will have to be reviewed regularly over time, and we'll have to make sure that we keep the schools succeeding and working in an upwards direction as they are now, and get them to a point of being good, to hopefully get them to a point of being great. I'm not going to make any crazy promises like the Tories do, because I think it's wrong to make promises and then break them as they did in the past.
In terms of, we talked a little bit about kind of what we can do to help retain people on the island. In terms of regeneration, the money for regeneration, where would you like to see that money be spent on the island? Because obviously there was a lot of talk before the change in administration of that being around the Bay Area, and this sort of has been drifted when we had Julie Evans-Jones in a couple of weeks to say it's going to be more in the kind of Newport Key area and kind of trying to develop those things, with lots of different comments. Where would you like to see that money being spent?
I think that money needs to be spent across the island. I don't think we ought to be focusing our efforts only in one area on the island. I think the Bay is in desperate need of regeneration, and that's why we were looking at that through the Inner Circle work that we commissioned last year, and that is one of the 11 areas that is moving forward for the regeneration. Again, the Newport Key area and Newport Harbour, that's very important. East Cowes again, and Whippingham, we need to be looking at ensuring that we're retaining and protecting our marine industry on the Isle of Wight and growing our marine industry on the Isle of Wight. Again, over in Cowes, the same thing. Ryde has been in desperate need as a gateway for the island. Ryde has been in desperate need of rejuvenation for some years, and I think it's really important that money's focused there as well. But we also need to make sure that we don't forget areas like Ventnor and like the West Wight, who too often end up missing out in things like this.
Okay, thanks. We're going to go to a quick break now, and then when we come back, we'll talk a bit more about the kind of plans for the election, thoughts on what could happen post-May, and kind of the future for the island independence.
Stay social and get in touch. It's /Vectis Radio on Facebook. The World Wide Web never felt so local.
Hello, you're listening to the Political Soapbox. Today we have Julia Baker-Smith from the Island Independence talking all about kind of the plans, the current budget we've spoken about already, and plans for the future is kind of what we want to move on to now. It's going to be a really interesting election, and things especially are being affected nationally with kind of how well the Conservatives are doing in winning a by-election for the first time in 35 years as a governing party to win a by-election. Do we think that kind of spread of that kind of people of putting their faith in Theresa May and the Conservative Party, do we think that will spread to the island?
It's just beyond me. I can't understand how on the one hand you have people are obviously and rightly very, very concerned about the level of cuts that are happening nationwide and the impacts on the NHS. And meanwhile, they're voting for a party whose fundamental core principle is about taking public services out of public hands, about shrinking government and putting things into the hands of corporations, which ultimately only causes money to be siphoned out of government and into private hands and up into the richest and the wealthiest, and it widens the wealth gap. And it's interesting because I have this conversation quite often with Conservative colleagues. You know, we all get on behind the scenes and chat and what have you at County Hall. I say to them, you know, how is it that you can be supporting this ideology? And they say, oh, well, you know, not everyone always agrees with all of the principles of any one party. But it's the core fundamental principle, this core idea that the shrinking of the state and the placing of public services into private hands, that's something that isn't going to change with from leader to leader within the Conservative Party. And it's something that I think if you disagree, if you fundamentally disagree with the idea of shrinking the NHS, with the idea of getting rid of libraries, with the idea of putting more and more social care into private hands, then I think you need to really, really think twice about whether or not you're going to support that overall ideology of a Conservative Party.
Do you think that the attitude is that it's about stability? People want a council, people want a government that can lead and just keep and steady the ship and keep us going along, more than kind of this. They see like Labour at the moment in kind of chaos with the thing, and they think, oh, how could you possibly run the country? And they see that above the actual act of kind of leading and running the council chamber. You know, the Conservatives will ride the wave up to the election, saying, you know, we have taken over and we have steadied the ship and we've saved the day from the island independence. They do that wonderfully. The Conservatives want to steady the ship and save and keep calm and carry on for everybody, and that plays into, you know, people. I want a council that can make sure that they get you know all of our services are kept on going, and we have bin collections on time and things like that. People worry that as soon as you have infighting or chaos in leadership or within a group or a party, that the fundamental basic things that a council needs to deliver just won't happen.
I think there's a lot of rhetoric around this idea of steadying the ship. I don't see a steady ship as one that's capsizing under the weight of cuts. I don't think there is a need for national politics and national diktat to be coming down to a local level. I think at a local level we need people, local people, whose primary aim is to support and to improve lives for island people, running the island. And I think as long as you get a party in charge whose primary aim, and interestingly the Conservative, Island Conservative website, I stumbled across it the other day, and their primary aim on their front page is, I can't remember the exact wording, but it's effectively to do the bidding of the National Party at local level. Well, I would rather be doing the bidding of local people at local level, and I don't think there's a place for National Party politics at island level.
Lots of people are quite confused about the island independence on kind of where you sit in the political spectrum. Mm. So, kind of, what are we voting for? Where would you say that if you had to put the independence in that left, right, authoritarian, libertarian kind of area, where would it go?
Well, firstly, the island independence are not aligned to any kind of political diktat nationally, so I think that's really important to note. But one of the questions I often get asked, actually, I'm going to change the question slightly, I know it's a horrible thing for politicians to do, but one of the questions I often get asked is, how is it that you can be an independent and you can still work as part of a group? And my answer to that is that we are independent from national party politics. We are not independent from each other. Now, in terms of our ideology, I think most of us sit in a fairly central place, really. I mean, on the one hand, we're pro-business, we support business on the island, and the feedback that we've had from business over the last 4 years has been incredibly positive. We set up the Memorandum of Understanding with the Chamber of Commerce. We've worked very closely with them. We work very closely with the Agents Forum. We work very closely with the Federation of Small Businesses. And I think sometimes we are perceived as being overly socialist. I don't think that's the case at all. And I don't think wanting to retain basic public services such as the NHS, social care, education in public hands is being socialist. If you look back to the 1970s, actually that probably would have been considered to be a fairly conservative view, but it's just the Conservatives have shifted further right, Labour have shifted further left, and they've left this gulf in the middle where normal people, everyday people, don't feel like they're being represented. And I think that's the space the island independents fill.
I know you're part of the group on Facebook about a council for women. Do you think that the there's been a lot of talk recently about Diane, sorry, I forgot my name, from Labour, has had a big campaign about the way that people are treating women through Twitter and through different things. I know Harriet Harman was very big on this and promoting women. Do you think politics, is it kind of promotes enough for women to get involved and want to represent their people? Do you think it is, you know, that balance and the abuse that people are getting and all sorts of things, do you think that's a welcoming place for people to be part of?
I think I certainly stood for council 4 years ago because I didn't feel like I was being represented. I was 31 at the time. I was on my own with two small children, and I didn't see really anyone on the council that was representing me. There were a great deal of retired men that, you know, already, you know, had a reasonable amount of money and what have you. There wasn't anyone just representing my section of the community, so that was why I stood. I think women are underrepresented in politics nationally. I think women are underrepresented in politics locally. I think it is quite hard for women to get into politics and be able to make that work-life balance. I mean, I've been criticised for having claimed over my entire time in council, I think I've claimed about £2,000 in assistance with childcare. And I've been heavily criticised for that. And I think when you are heavily criticised for doing such things, it can be off-putting for women. And I do think we need to encourage more women. And that's why I'm a member of that particular Facebook page, because it doesn't matter what colour party you support. I think we need to be encouraging more women to come forward and stand up for what they believe in.
In the build up to the May election, there's obviously a lot of kind of parties that aren't just the Ireland Independents and the Conservatives. We've still got UKIP from the right, and then from the left, there's quite a lot of progressive left parties which could take over some of those Ireland Independent seats. So from the Green Party, with Vicks leading them into their first kind of big council election, and from the Liberal Democrats as well, post referendum, seem to be having that surge. Do you think there is that that those kind of progressive left parties could take some of the seats away from the independents, and what kind of response would you have to that?
I see us being able to work with the progressive left parties after May, so I'm not particularly concerned. I mean, what I would hope is people will look and they will see either the parties that support cuts and austerity, or they will see the parties and groups that want to take a more progressive, forward-thinking approach. And I think if you're looking at a ballot paper and you see the choice between a Conservative or a Green, I certainly know I would rather go for the more progressive approach. In terms of whether or not them becoming more popular will push us out, I think that's down to the individuals in the ward, to be honest. I think you need, you know, if you know that your councillor has represented you well, if you know that your councillor has got in touch with you when you've sent them an email, if you know that your councillor has worked hard and made a difference within your ward, then, you know, please do support them in May, rather than maybe trying to take a protest vote. Just please don't support more cuts and austerity.
So, under the Ireland Independence administration, what do you think would be the proudest achievement for the group since taking over?
I think we have many proud achievements. I'm personally very proud of the work that we've done on the regeneration strategy. We've stabilised the council, we've stabilised the staffing levels, and I think that's incredibly important, remembering that that's employing island people to deliver island services. We've slowed the rate of the cuts by being more creative. We're starting to generate income for the council. But I think the regeneration strategy actually is really, really exciting. That's something that was very much our baby, and something that we're now seeing come forward with the new regeneration team that are in place, who are absolutely fantastic. I'm so impressed with the work they're doing already, and I think that's something that we can be very, very proud of. And I hope when the fruits of the regeneration strategy start to come to bear, we'll see some really nice regeneration on the island. We'll see areas that are looking really, really good, and we'll see an increase in jobs and prosperity for the island. These things don't happen overnight, but we've certainly put the building blocks in place for that.
And what has been the kind of trickiest bit during that administration? What do you think has been the hardest thing to bring the group together?
I think the hardest thing has been the level of cuts that have come from central government, the reduction in the grant funding that comes down from central government has had a huge impact. We had to find £12.5 million worth of savings last year, and actually you get this thing pop up on Facebook, don't you, that tells you what you were doing this time last year, and the news stories from this time last year popped up this morning talking about the budget setting last year. And I'm proud that we actually managed to resist and protect resist the cuts and protect as many services as we have done over our time in council, and make back office cuts without and efficiencies, making things more efficient has been incredibly important and bringing in revenue and income. So I think we've managed to protect the island far more than it would have been if it had been under another 4 years of Tory rule.
In the build up to the May election, what are kind of your big almost manifesto promises or your pledges for going into the next kind of campaign? Have they been formalised yet? What kind of stages are you at with those things?
Oh, so you're looking for a bit of an exclusive here, aren't you? Because we haven't actually released our aims and objectives for the next 4 years yet. But, you know, I think education is going to be very, very high on the list, supporting education, maintaining the improvement journey that we have set over the last 4 years. I think protecting social care is going to be very, very high on the list. I think the regeneration strategy and building upon those building blocks that we've already set in place is going to be high on the list, and transport infrastructure is going to be quite high there too, as well as looking across the council and across our services and making sure that we are generating as much revenue as possible, that we're bringing in as much money to the island, that we're supporting people in their skills and their jobs and growth and improvement.
Fantastic. Last week's show, we had Nicholas Belford from the Liberal Democrats. He was talking about the new English Isles paper that they've been bringing out. We kind of looked at the fact that the island he describes as being special because we've got that stretch of water that makes us different and makes it difficult to travel. Do you think? But then I kind of compared it to the fact that, you know, people in Cornwall or anywhere kind of far away from London, it's equally as challenging and equally as expensive to travel and to get across. So should we be getting special funding and special support because we've got a stretch of water between us and everywhere else?
Absolutely, we should. And Cornwall were given an increased level of assisted area status when the assisted area status levels were decided a few years ago. We, as Island Independents, were successful in getting assisted area status for the Isle of Wight. However, we would have liked to have got that stepped up to a higher level, so Cornwall have actually been given more than us, and I think we do have to be very aware of that stretch of water. I think we need to be thinking about what we would do maybe if one of those ferry companies came on the market again. Should the Isle of Wight Council be looking at taking them on? I don't know. That's something that I think does need to be considered, because I can't see how it's sustainable for us to continue with almost being held to ransom, if you like, by the ferry companies. So we do need to find solutions to that.
We're going to now try our weekly quick fire round of Prime Minister's questions. There's 20 questions that are just about your views, because obviously we've had an opportunity to talk for an hour today about lots of different things, but there's lots of questions I'm sure people would like to know your opinions on. So if we go through these, the first question is, are you for or against a fixed link?
I would be in favour of a study.
Should we allow fracking on the Isle of Wight?
I think fracking is a very, very worrying practice, and I think we should be looking at sustainable forms of energy.
What's the biggest problem facing the island today?
I think the financial situation is the biggest problem facing the island and probably the country.
Are you a saver or a spender?
I wish I had the money to be either.
What's the best thing about UK politics?
Diversity.
One word to describe Brexit?
Democratic.
What is the worst thing about politics in the UK?
Neoliberalist agenda.
What newspaper do you read?
The County Press, mostly.
Should we fine parents who take their children out of school for holiday?
No, I don't think we should.
When did you first vote?
When I was 18, for Peter Brand, actually.
Should the voting age be lowered?
I think it should, 16. I think we've got a lot of very sensible 16-year-olds on the island who deserve to have a voice.
Are you proud of your country?
I am proud of my country. Yeah.
What's the best thing about living on the Isle of Wight?
I think the beauty, the natural environment. It's a great place to live and it's a very safe place to raise children.
And what is the worst thing about living on the Isle of Wight?
The cost of the ferries.
One word to describe Donald Trump?
Oh, scary.
Who would win an arm wrestle between you or Jeremy Corbyn?
Well, I'm a lady, so I'd like to think it'd be Jeremy Corbyn.
Who will win the next general election?
Unfortunately, I think it will probably be the Conservative Party, but I would like it to be someone more progressive.
Is Britain full up?
I don't think we're full up. I think we need to be sensible.
And what would your first policy be if you became Prime Minister?
I would completely change the way school holidays work and allow families to take a certain amount of holiday per year with their children in the same way that you book time off work.
Councillor Whitehouse, when he was on the other day, he was talking about school holidays and looking at what the council can do to kind of rejig that with a four-term year at schools. Is this something you would support?
I think it's something I'd certainly like to look at. I think the school summer holidays, the six-week summer holidays, puts immense pressure on families, both in the cost of childcare and forces them to take holidays at the most expensive time of the year, if they can afford to take a holiday at all. So, yes, I think spreading holidays out and maybe having holidays at different times to the rest of the country would certainly assist people, and that's something I've always said, that if I ever became Prime Minister, then I would scrap school holidays in the way that we know them and give people the opportunity to take annual leave, if you like, with the rest of their family.
What about teachers in that situation? Where would they go? They just have to work constantly and hope you catch up with them.
No, I think you'd have a pool of supply teachers in the same way that you have people step in any other role. Nurses manage to take holidays and people step in for them.
Okay. In terms of energy and power and the environment on the island, obviously you've got lots of areas of outstanding natural beauty. And also a potential for a lot of green energy. We have Vestas supplying wind turbines that never get put up on the island. Mm-hmm. We have solar farms, but not enough to kind of sustain the whole island at the moment. Where would you like to see, kind of in terms of green energy on the island, it being moved forward?
I think we need to be supporting micro generation on people's homes, rather than maybe having huge, you know, 100-foot wind turbines. I think there are modern micro generation alternatives that are coming out now, and I think we need to support that through our planning policy. We need to support people to be able to put solar panels on their roofs, and behind the meter storage as well, to make sure that energy produced on the island doesn't go to waste and that it's stored here on the island and can be used when it's needed. And that can actually be done within people's homes and the tech's there now to do it.
So would you like to see, like, future builds and things having solar panels and mini turbines as kind of something set in there within their planning regulations that they have to be containing these, or is it just an option for some people?
Yeah, I mean, we do already have fairly robust planning policies with regard to the level of sustainability on homes. I think there's room for improvement there. But we always have to also be aware of the balance between the cost of the technology and the impact that that will have on the cost of homes. So, ideologically, I'd have solar panels on every roof or solar tiles. Or, you know, there's a company in East Cowes, -7, that actually make solar roofs, which look exactly the same as an ordinary roof. So, you know, I think there's a lot that can be done. And as the cost of that technology comes down, we'll be able to bring further policies through that reflect that.
There's been a lot of talk about the Syrian refugees and the five families that we're having here. Do you think the island is doing enough to help support refugees across, from across the world, especially in Syria and the Middle East at the moment?
I don't think the world is doing enough actually to support people in the Middle East. I think we need to be aware that it's our responsibility that we this country have been involved in the war in Syria, as have the USA, and I think closing our doors to some of the most vulnerable people in the world is really, really worrying. I think five families probably isn't enough, but we also need to make sure that if we were going to take more families, that we could sustain them financially and sustain the services financially. And that's very much the responsibility of government, to ensure that they're supporting councils to be able to do that. We obviously need to be aware of security. We need to be aware of safety. But I think the Muslim world in general has become demonised because of a few very, very extreme factions, and I think it's quite similar to demonising all Christians because of the KKK. I don't think you can demonise an entire race and religion of people.
Donald Trump's comments were, if he had a bowl full of Skittles and a couple of them were poisoned, would you still take a handful in terms of, you've got some level of extremism, would you still allow some to go through? Do you think that's a fair comment? Do you think that's kind of way that people feel about this issue?
I think it's a very, very sad comment that someone in that position of power would be having so much influence upon people's thinking as to spread fear. I don't think we need to be spreading fear. This is probably the most hippie thing I'm ever going to say, but I think we need to be spreading love and looking after our fellow man. We all live on this planet together, and I think we need to be looking after each other.
Next week on the show, we've got the National Farmers Union in, and we're going to be talking about Brexit and how it's affected them, especially in the farming community. Do you think Brexit will have a big impact on people on the island?
I think it will certainly reduce access to the possibilities of European funding. And when we've got a government that are reducing our funding, I think the last thing we need is to lose access to further funding. I think a lot of people who voted for Brexit did so because they don't like the way things are going with the country at the moment. They don't like the austerity. And I think it's unfortunate that a lot of people that voted for Brexit won't get the Brexit that they want or the Brexit that they need in order to protect and retain their services, because this is going to be a very, very conservative, very, very right-wing, very, very protectionist Brexit that I think could have some serious impacts on our economies. I think it could have been done differently. I think it could be done differently if someone else is in charge. But it does worry me, the impact that that will have on the island, the impact that it will have on our farming community, the impact that that will have on our imports and the cost of food at the supermarket. We're already seeing the cost of food increasing and the size of packaging decreasing at the same time. And I think we need to be aware that there probably will be a bit of a dip. And when I say a bit of a dip, I think it could be several years, but we do need to prepare ourselves for that and try and ensure that we've got the strongest possible economy on the island by the time Brexit really bites, to be able to protect ourselves from the impacts.
The island voted 62% to leave. Did you kind of expect that kind of result?
I knew it was always going to be about 50-50. I knew it was very, very split. And I know that, you know, we do have quite a lot of quite conservative people on the island, but also a lot of people who just want to see a change, who want to see a change nationally. I don't think the campaign was very fairly run, and I think a lot of people were misled. And you know, people that I speak to now say if they had their chance again, they might have made a different decision. But ultimately, we are where we are, and this is a democracy. And now the views of the people have been heard, the government are going to move forward and do what they will with Brexit. I have to say, having been born in 1981, I've never known anything different. But I know there are people that do remember life before the EU. I just don't know whether the economy is strong enough and capable enough to go back to life as it was before.
Okay, thank you very much for coming on the show today. It's been really interesting to hear all about the Ireland independence and your view on the island, and especially in the build-up to the election. We're hoping to have some political soapbox hustings and all sorts of things in the lead-up to the election, so I'm sure we'll hear more from you as we go. We've got final kind of 30 seconds if you want to put your final bid in of why you think an island independence run council from May would be a success.
Again, I think we've demonstrated our ability over the last 4 years to improve things on the Isle of Wight, to make things better and to help the island to succeed. And we will continue to help the island to succeed, to set it up to succeed, and to represent the views of islanders rather than the views of a national party.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm back tomorrow evening with Mitch and Lewis for the Sunday Roast, our silly three-hour craziness that is going to be Oscars-themed this week, and we've got special guest Joe Groves in the studio. Thanks once again to Julia for coming on, and I'll see you next week with our Brexit special. www.vectisradio.com